All right, we've got PJ Proby holding light up here.
Yeah, well, PJ Proby, does anybody remember him in America?
Right.
It's great. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. And I think he's living in a hut in Wales somewhere now. He's kind of, something's happened to him. But at the time, oh yeah, he got banned. You remember he split his pants? Yeah, and they got banned off British television for doing this, so that kind of ruined his career. But he did Hold Me, great song.
You and Jim are playing on here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I don't think you're on this one, though.
I don't know whether Andy did or not, no, but I remember Jim and I did it, yeah. Jim Sullivan and I worked together a lot, you know, and just very good friends even to this day, he's a good man, you know, and we used to play chess. Do you remember us playing chess? We had chess, he used to put the amp between us and if I was whoever's on the acoustic or whatever, and we used to have this game of chess. And the artist used to come out and say, who's winning? It's always Jim for some unknown reason. But Jim Sullivan, it's sorry that he's not here. It's like Bobby Graham. I'm sorry Bobby Graham couldn't make it here because he's not a fine drummer. But Jim was a complete, what's the thing? He would go for something totally. I remember when he wanted to watch the stars. So he built this great big concrete slab in his garden, bought this telescope, and he would sit out there covered in coats and blankets watching stars in the middle of the night. And he comes to the session in the morning like this, and he's like, what's the matter? I've been up all night watching the stars, it's fantastic. Another time he decided to go and become an underwater diver. So he got all the gear, everything. He got like two tanks, rubber suit, for the thing, the goggles. Dived into this pit in the north of London, this thing, hit his head on the bottom of it, came up and said, I don't like that anymore. He was still in his closet, as far as I know. All his gear.
How many guitarists were on the session scene? Regular guitarists.
Yeah. I suppose in the '60s, doing the work would be about 10 or 12 guitar players.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be Joe Moretti.
It was myself, Jim Sullivan, Joe Moretti, Judd Proctor, Brian Daly,
Jimmy Page.
Jimmy Page came in and out of it because Jimmy couldn't read, so he kind of did the type of sessions where he could actually solo on. And if he was an electric and I was an acoustic, which happened quite a few times, then he couldn't make a part. He had a wonderful ear, Jimmy, and he said, "That's his Kavik." And I used to play the bit for him. He said, "Just do it again." It's fine. Then they used to be like, "Look, this one he used to play it." But then they'd use him basically to play ad libs and screaming solos and things like that.
Folks may have noticed that Vic does voices.
I don't notice that. He
channels these different musicians.
Well, they're all wonderful characters, you know. They're all great guys, and I'm so proud to work with them and with Andy and all of the people. It was a wonderful. Still is. It's a good life.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to PJ Proby's.
Yeah.
PJ Proby was a curious example because he's an American who goes and tries to make a career as a performing in Britain.
Yeah, he did. He did that great song out of West Side Story, and I can't think of it. Somewhere or something. And he was a good. This actually record doesn't show PJ up as good as he is. You know, he was a great, good singer, good performer. As I say, I don't know. He was in the Elvis tradition. And he used to gesticulate and all a bit on the stage, and as I say, he ripped his pants on the TV show. But
you had lots of folks who came to London because they wanted that kind of London sound.
Oh, sure, yeah. Nancy Sinatra came over, did a couple of albums with Nancy Sinatra with Johnny Harris, the boot, yeah. And Jack Jones. Tony Bennett came over.
You had Frenchmen too?
Frenchmen, yeah, yes. Oh God, I'm terrible at these names now. You're tripping me up here.
There was a session that you had with a French producer who came over, and I'm thinking of Alan Whale.
Yes, I can't remember. There was a wonderful bass player. Came Alan Whale, he's passed on now, God rest his soul. But he was bald. And this, sorry. And he didn't go do the first session. We did the first sessions with this singer, and he was great. Johnny Halliday, that's right. Johnny Halliday was the singer. And this producer came in, and he was listening to the track. He said, "Oh, fantastic." You see, and just at that time, we came in for the second session the next day. And he looked out and he says, "Who is he?" See, so because Alan walked in with his pipe and his bald head and all this, you see. So the guy said, "Oh, that's Alan Wilde." He says, "I don't want him on my session. I'm not having him. He's too old. I don't like him. Get him out of it." So he said, "Well, he was the guy on the session that you'd just been listening to. He thought it was wonderful." He says, "Well, you can stay then." But that's a sort of another guitar player, George Kisher, was bald. Dusty Springfield wouldn't have him on his session. She was bald too. Yeah. But we won't go into that. Yeah.
Dusty had her issues.
Dusty had her personal issues.
How many women were involved in the session scene?
A couple of viola players, and that was it. There was nobody really.
Breakaways.
Oh, I see, but the vocal wise, yeah.
Yeah, there were quite a few women vocals.
Yeah.
In groups, you know, backing groups.
Backing groups.
Yeah, Madeline Bell used to do a lot of backing, and the Lady Birds, and other groups, yeah, but they always used to be the same, Mike Sam singers and the people. Yeah. But they were all different names, same guys, same faces, to whoever got the gig, you know, and they sort of phone people up, so I'm already working, so you'd find the Mike Sam singers with half the Lady Birds, and it was just the same sort of, it was like a club that went around like this, you know, all the time. And then around about the 1978s or something, 1978, it started to fall apart, the camaraderie went out of it, and you'd get all the guys coming out of college, nothing. First of all, they come out of college with a degree in engineering and producing or record or film, whatever it was. And they all had a friend who was an arranger, a musician. And so it sort of decimated the whole business. Instead of like a lot of guys doing the work, all the work, there was a few guys doing a lot of work, if you know what I mean. So everybody suffered, and that's when I kind of, you know, it all changed, and I got out of it in about 1982.
Andy, how long were you an active session musician in London?
How long was I in the session?
When did you start? When did you finish?
I started about end of the 50s, I would think.
58, 59, it was going to
be. Yeah, something like that. You know, until, I guess, about 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Through the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the 80s, you were the same as me. It just changed so much. And now I've got a digital studio and that sort of business, which I do background music and stuff with. And I feel guilty. I've got all these samples of trumpets and trombones, saxophones, flutes, guitars even, and playing it on the keyboard. And I still feel strange and kind of guilty, you know, when I do that, the trumpet comes out and I feel that. Because I'm doing a guy out of work, but everybody else is doing it, so you have to go with the flow.
I kind of worked myself out of the session business. Because in 64, I started working with Marlene Dietrich as one of her accompanists. Not the whole year, maybe 3 months of the year, but it was spaced out, you know. It's the old story, if they call for you and you're not there on the phone, dwindles away after a while, you know. So after 2 or 3 years of that, it was less and less session work.
Yeah.
But I got around the world 3 times in a great life, so you can't have anything.
Yeah.
So the fixers, someone like Charlie Katz or Sidney Sachs, if you weren't there for their phone call, then you didn't get the gigs.
No, right.
It was an incremental sliding scale, you know, the less you did, you know. And I can remember times when I'm like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, working all the time, and a big lines in the diary through, no work, don't take anything, don't pick the phone up, you know. Then the phone would go, and Charlie, for example, they used to, voice like that. "Hello, Vic, I need you on Saturday." Oh, all right, Charlie, so it was 10 to 10 on Saturday, that was gone. I had to go and tell the wife. But it's just the sort of thing you have to do. Two kids and a mortgage, you know, and you just have to keep going out there. Because you know, as Andy said, you know, the less you do, the less you do. Because there's always somebody else. And, you know, as time went on and guitar players came along and, you know, great guitar players were coming out of the woodwork, you know, you just had to either be there or not be there at all, you know, so.
It's the old story, nobody's indispensable.
Nobody's indispensable, yeah, yeah. Look after your job, it's the only one you got, yeah. But it's good times. Yeah.